I'm Kelly Andrews, and this is the Wild Seed Podcast, named for Octavia Butler, whose Positive Obsessions essay inspired it. Ellen Wilmot, one of the first people awarded the Victoria Medal of Honor by the Royal Horticultural Society in 1897, was known for carrying seeds with her, leaving them behind in the gardens she visited. When spiky silver sea holly, actually a kind of thistle, sprang up months later and became known as Miss Wilmot's ghost. This story is apocryphal, but if evidence supported it, I might not believe it anyway. In my experience, growing plants from seed to maturity is much harder than scattering them on the ground. I began gardening when I became a homeowner, but I did not begin planting seeds until I became a stay-at-home mom. With a single income, heirloom roses and brand new hybrids became too expensive, but seeds seemed like a fabulous deal. I could have dozens of plants for the $2 price of a pack of seeds, right? I soon learned better. I recently found the receipt from a 2008 mail order purchase stuck in a garden book. 8 species of seeds, ranging from Tricertis herta miyazaki to Nepeta felix. Exactly none of these plants is currently growing in my garden. I believe I got 1 or 2 catmints and blazing stars to bloom, but they long since melted away. Over the next few years, I learned that Jiffy peat pots and a windowsill weren't enough to germinate seeds and grow them into plants sturdy enough to manage the rough and tumble conditions of my garden. Packed clay soil, invasive exotic weeds that jumped the fence from the park beyond, and excavating squirrels, sure they must have buried a black walnut in my potted plants. I invested in seed starting trays, vermiculite, and full spectrum lights that imitated the sun. But when I couldn't find what I wanted from large catalogs like Burpee and Park, I branched out to smaller companies like Select and Swallowtail. I ordered hard to get hybrid geranium seeds from England and learned to stratify seeds in the refrigerator for weeks or months, surprising my husband when he looked in the cheese drawer for the makings of a sandwich. I started filching ripe seeds from neighborhood gardens. Now, I prefer to grow by seed. Those plants are my babies in the way that purchased nursery stock just isn't. I sustained myself during the cold months of winter, especially while I was homebound during COVID, and I watched my green sprouts, checking on them multiple times a day. I took pleasure in the slowness of it all, the time it took to germinate and grow to a seedling, to transfer to a nursery pot, or to a bed to grow it on. I'm sure the algorithms thought that I was growing cannabis in my basement. Then, a few years later, 3 things came together. I discovered a one-person seed company run by a self-described plant geek who gathered seeds that grew in her Bucks County yard. Then, a friend asked me to create a logo for the pollinator pathway for Wynwood Valley Park. You know, that park whose weeds frequently colonized my backyard. When I attended a talk on native plantings from the local nursery that I relied on for shrubs, it reminded me of something I always knew. Native plantings were better. At that point, my seed passion became far more localized. When I asked ChatGPT to suggest native plants for my garden, the AI got it wrong. When I asked it why I should plant native plants, it did better. Here's my summary of what it said. Native plants are adapted to the local environment and thus more resilient to weather and climate. They require less water when established in the right setting and tend to have natural disease resistance, reducing the need for chemicals. Native plants are part of the natural ecosystem, maintaining biodiversity, but providing habitat, food, and shelter for native wildlife, including insects, birds, and mammals, including the human ones. Plants are part of our cultural heritage and the history of a region. They provide us humans roots to the places we live. So why was I modeling my garden after English Victorians like Ellen Wilmot and Gertrude Jekyll? Why was I ordering my seeds from an English company? In fact, the last order from the company I used to rely on was seized and destroyed by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And I've since learned that the founder of the company has been banned from Nepal for unauthorized plant hunting. Introduced plants are called invasive or colonizers, and this is a little too on the nose since I'm of largely English colonial descent. But I can do better. Descent is not identity, and identity is not destiny. I am not an indigenous person, but I can honor and protect the land I stand on by cultivating plants that support its health. So I plant milkweed for the monarchs, but I care about ugly bugs too. I let the aphids feed on my viburnum and the leaf miners feast on my aquilegia, and thus ladybugs, cardinals, and hummingbirds are fed. It's a system. Once I ripped out the invasive garlic mustard in my shady garden, I identified the plants that took root. Sweet Sicily, White Avens, Honewort, Enchanter's Nightshade. Now that I've named them, they are no longer weeds. They are native garden plants growing in their proper place. I collect seeds from the wild and cultivate them for my garden, even trying to restore a meadow in my parents' yard after a tornado destroyed most of their trees 2 years ago. As usual, my dad mowed it as soon as his riding mower fit between the fallen logs. I have planted 45 to 50 native species, from stalwarts like echinacea and phlox to lesser known species like cunilla and melianthum. Have the pollinators and birds flocked to this new habitat? Not noticeably. I know it will take years for many of my plants to mature and for the wildlife to come back. I can wait. Planting a seed is a hope for tomorrow. Cultivating a plant that takes years to bloom is faith that there will be a future. And planting native species is a small action to ensure that we'll be there to experience that future.